Sam Ellinger and I were just chatting before he joins us in studio now, or before we took the air, here in the 8 o'clock hour on a Monday morning, the last day of April. What's up, Sam? How are you?
Terrific. How are you?
Good. Sam was telling me that he went to his son's T-ball game.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I heard you have some coaches I might know coaching with you.
Is that right? On T-ball?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Which one? Greg?
Nope.
Brian?
Nope.
Those are literally the two coaches.
Oh, okay.
What the hell's going on here?
I don't know.
Ridge?
Oh, Ridge. Yeah, Ridge. You're thinking of a different T-ball team. So this is how ridiculous it is. Sammy is signed up for an additional.
Double coach.
Like when this season is over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ridge is the, I'm going to coach with Ridge.
Good luck, dude.
Yeah.
I was hanging out with Ridge on Saturday. He's in a lot of trouble.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. That's my guy. That's
Sammy,
my guy.
How about that?
You already
part
got
of the
Sammy
neighborhood
locked
watch.
Two T-ball teams at 4 years old?
Yeah.
We got to get them started, man. You know.
I mean, the scholarship isn't going to earn itself.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You're certainly not saving for college.
It's a long-term investment.
Yeah.
That's the Gutierrez route. That's what Mama and Papa Gutierrez
did. Look
how
it turned out.
Right? All three of us went and played soccer in college.
There you go.
See?
You invest your money in travel teams and taking kids everywhere and skip out on vacations. Your vacations become tournaments, sports tournaments, and then...
So I actually asked him, and he does. He has fun. Like, he's just running around with kids and stuff. But on the drive home, I was like, buddy, did you have fun? He's like, yeah. I was like, what was the best part? Getting a sticker.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which is perfect. That's exactly what I wanted to say.
That's what happened at the end of, if I do a good show here, Stephen and Nate give me, I have a page up on my wall there, I get a sticker.
Scratch and sniff is his favorite.
You ask me
he loves
some,
scratch and sniff.
You ask me some days, like, what's the best part of your day? It's like, I got a sticker today.
Yeah, that is really
do they
sweet.
Still have
good
scratch
show.
And sniff? And scratch and sniff? Remember those?
Yeah, of course I
oh,
do.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You didn't really have to scratch them, did you?
No.
Like,
no.
You know?
And you kind of didn't want to. Then your finger smells.
And they had some bizarre flavors. I remember they had like a gasoline flavor, like car gasoline was like
was
a flavor.
My favorite.
Yeah.
Wait, really?
We're really having
one.
Kids sniff this?
That seems the opposite of
they
what
they always
you
told
do.
Me to stop sniffing the rubber cement.
Yeah, like rubber cement scratches
I love
this.
That.
Paint thinner, you know. Oh, God, well, that's a good one.
Put it in a brown bag and just.
It's funny what motivates kids. My son hates stickers. He hates
really?
Them. He gets like, he nervously reacts to them. So if you go to some sort of event where you're supposed to write your name down and put a sticker on, I mean, he. The look on his face. But so they used
like
to
the spikes on the sticker or something.
So like, and every time he goes into some youth sport, they always try to reward the kids with stickers. And he's just, and I'm like, you have to tell him ahead of time. Look, if you want to do anything to motivate him, threaten him with stickers
right.
and you will get effort out of this kid. But his whole deal is he wants to score. He wants to slide into home plate. Like that's the only thing that matters to my son in the baseball. And he's like, he's cursed. It ain't happening, man. Like either the inning's going to end via run rule or outs before he gets to come home, or he's not going to get up in time. Something's going to happen where he's going to get stranded at second base every time, and he just trudges into the dugout with the saddest look on his face ever.
Yeah.
Every time, and nothing else matters. He could hit a rope, a line drive, anything. No,
that's
he
awesome.
Wants to score. But what we were talking about, Jake, is that like to me, nothing has crystallized to me. The complexity of each sport, or lack thereof, more than trying to teach it to a young child, to like a 5 year old. And soccer is incredibly easy to teach to a kid, and it's made me realize how simple it is. Kick the ball that way, and don't use your hands. Got it.
Yep.
You know, there's not really any vagary here. There's no confusion. You know, it's that. Okay, I can do that. Trying to explain to a five-year-old what they're supposed to do and when in a baseball game it makes you want to pull your hair out.
Yeah.
Touch, step on the base. No, tag the guy. No, run now. Don't run. Back to the bag. You know, and they're just looking at you like, what?
I have this distinct memory of being like eight or so, like just playing Little League and just being absolutely furious. I was playing like shortstop or second base, and I tagged the guy and then threw. But the ball wasn't in my glove.
Yeah.
I just tagged him.
With the empty
glove.
The ball was in your throwing hand?
Safe.
You're like, what the hell, man? I mean, I'm holding
furious.
The ball.
Furious, yeah. I mean, just absolutely furious. I hated baseball for like 48 hours.
Yeah. And then, like, I have my wife sitting next to me going, well, why aren't they supposed to run now? He hit the ball. Well, yeah. No, you're only supposed to. Eh. Anyway, it's good times, right?
Yeah.
Good times. It's a good way to spend a weekend with your kids.
It was fun.
Where do you want to start? I always like to do this with you. We got a lot of stuff. Royals won 2 games. There are the fun police now.
That's what I want to talk about, man.
Okay. I can see. Well, and I saw your tweets. All right, let's start there. We'll forget the draft for a little bit. Salvador Perez is now the moral authority of baseball.
Oh, my God.
And your thoughts.
Okay, so my initial reaction was one of, like, hilarity. Like, this guy, my initial reaction was, do you know how furious 2018 Salvador Perez would be at 2015 Salvador Perez?
Yes.
Or 2017 Salvador Perez? You know, the Salvador Perez who's dumping Gatorade on a Tuesday night for a 4-1 win or whatever. It was then after that, I got sad. I got sad that this is what the Royals' current state has done to Sal, because he's not thinking straight. Like, this is something he had to have, like, gone home and regretted it or felt bad, felt dumb, because this is who he is. This is his, like, Salvador Perez brand. They literally had a billboard of him splashing a teammate with water after what I assume was a very, you know, run-of-the-mill 4-1 win. Like, that's who he is. He's the energy guy. He's the, you know, flexes at second base. He is the smiling, the Instagram, the crashing interviews, like that's who he is. And for him to do this, like, really bizarre 180 and still be on the Royals too, because that's who they are, or at least who they were mm-hmm. when they didn't stink. It made me really sad that this is where the Royals are. Like, even more than Lorenzo Cain leaving, even more than Eric Hosmer leaving, even more than this weird, you know, the thing that happened with Moose, where he was kind of wanted to leave, nobody was there for him, so he came back and it's awkward. Like, even more than all that, this is like the starkest, you know, the clearest illustration that you could possibly have that the Royals are over. The 2000, you know, the fun Royals are over. When Salvador Perez is getting mad at a guy hitting a home run and being excited about it.
Like, this is the end of the innocence.
The Royals are done. Yeah, yeah. It's time to start anew. And I hope he regrets it. I hope that, you know, I don't expect him to say that out loud, but I hope that somewhere in him he's like, wait, I said that? And like, I was just pissed off. I had a bad night.
Well, I completely agree with everything you said. So I'll play devil's advocate from this standpoint, that maybe he doesn't believe any of it, and he's just trying to light a spark under a team that's flat out rotten.
Sure. yes. And it, you know, as far as these things go, sort of worked, right?
Well, 1-2 in a row. The guy kicked the ball right after that. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
1-2 in a row in this, which is like the first time that anybody realized that, you know, Casey was done.
Yeah, by the way, what's the story there?
Because he sent a tweet that was like, or a Facebook post or something that was like very anti-Moose. You know, I can pull it up in a second. But
was this before Moose came back? Was this after he came back?
I'd have to check the date. I think it was after. But I have to check the date. But we can pull that up pretty easy. But like, it's just sort of, if you're going to light a spark, and I realize, like, we can all, like, manufacture some energy at times, and sometimes we have to, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes that's just, like, part of the job. But if you're going to do it, like, you can't just do it in such an intellectually dishonest, like, absolutely fake way. Like, Salvador Perez, I mean, this is, like, I don't know. This is, like, pothead becoming a narc, or, like, just, like, such a weird...
I will say this. The 42-year-old me... would be insanely critical of the 22-year-old me in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So is it hypocritical, or is it like he's he's growing into a grumpy old man like the rest of us, you know?
Like overnight? Like, it's still April.
Well, didn't he did a Salvi splash that night, didn't he? Like, after the game? I think he Salvi splashed Gordo.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm getting my games confused this weekend, maybe. But he did one this weekend, at least.
You know, if Tim Anderson, like, had a sense of humor, he would have done interviews like Sunday just saying like how out of line Salvador Perez is, like showing up his team with, you know, the Salvi splash and all that stuff.
Act like you've been there before. I mean, you're Salvi splashing on a 5-20 team.
And I also have, you know, I come at this from a place that absolutely adored everything that the Royals did.
That's
in that
why
time.
This bothers you so much, yes. Is because you and I, we've loved Salvi, when other people have been critical, mm-hmm. they were critical of it. Like, are you really going to do a Salvi splash after every win? Are you really going to do this after every win, even on a bad team? Yeah. And you and I were like, why not?
Sure.
You know, let's have some fun. It's actually a game, you know?
It's a sport. It's entertainment. And so that part of it, too. Like, Sal was like sort of, you know, our ambassador to the fun world. And I think that, look, he wasn't the only one, right? Like, Eric Hosmer is that guy. You know, Lorenzo Cain is that guy. Gerard Dyson had a big voice in that way. Danny Duffy. I mean, there are a lot of guys that had that personality, but Sal was kind of the face of that, right? The voice of that.
Gerard Dyson, far more than anyone else, brought the personality to that team. Lorenzo Cain's was in a much more subdued way. He smiled a lot.
Yeah.
You know, but he wasn't a brash guy. Uh-huh. Haas is the old school pro. He was going to go along with the team, but he wasn't ever going to be the ringleader. In fact, he was the one that was trying to pull guys back every once in a while. Like, hey, let's calm it down a little bit.
Yeah.
And Moose is just a red ass. You know, Moose is the guy with the bad temper that if somebody talks trash, he's going to talk trash back. He's not a taunter or a celebration guy. It was Gerard Dyson and Salvador Perez that brought the fun and the swagger to that team.
Yeah.
They were the ones doing the zoom out at second base and having fun. And it was great. It rubbed people the wrong way, but we loved it.
And now we're talking about it in the past tense.
Well, dude.
You know what I mean? Like, because there's no more fun. And look, I get that you can't. What are they, 7-20 now? I
think. Yeah, 7-20 now.
You know, it's hard to have fun on a team that bad and all that stuff. I get it. But be who you are, you know, be you. And you can't go from that to now just like the grumpy old Brian McCann, you know, just like sitting in his lawn chair, like screaming at clouds. Like that's Salvador Perez is, he's 27 years old, right? Like he's still a young guy. This is not, you know, it was so annoying. It was like, I don't know how many times something is incredibly, like almost infuriating, but I'll just say annoying, hilarious, and also sad at the same time. I have all those emotions about Salvador Perez becoming, you know,
the fun
chief of police of the fun police.
my response to you was maybe this. It's hilarious to me because it's maybe the greatest heel turn of all time. Like there's no, I mean, from Salvi Splash Guy to really no fun for you unless you make the playoffs. You can't celebrate that. It's actually kind of genius in some ways. Like how could Salvador Perez of all people execute a heel turn? That's it right there. Yeah. So that's hilarious. It is sad. I mean, look, life comes at you fast, man, because. And it isn't just that this team was fun and madcap and all that. They were young, athletic, with a great defense and a tremendous bullpen. And 3 years later, they're old, stodgy, and have a terrible bullpen.
Yeah.
Like 3 years.
Yeah.
And really, I remember talking to a Royals executive after the World Series team, like the next year, and he was like, look, we're not young anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were young for the past 3 years, and we're not anymore. We're not old, but we're not young. Mm-hmm. And now they're old. Mm-hmm. This is an old team, you know? And so it's crazy how quickly that changes. But I don't know. At the end of the day, I think it really more than anything is just Salvador Perez being mad that the team stinks right now.
100%.
You know, 100%. And trying to do something to light the team.
100%. That's what it is. But it's just the wrong message from the wrong guy. You know, there's other ways, you know, I think that he can do that. And, you know, the other thing I was thinking about, too, is Skoglund, right, that gave it up. You know, maybe Skoglund, and this isn't his personality to express it. So maybe he was super pissed off and didn't feel like he had.
He's a rookie.
Yeah. he doesn't have the stature that Sal does. And so maybe Sal was doing that for his pitcher. I don't know. Like we can reverse engineer like some different motivations, but all of that is trying to explain, you know, one of baseball's biggest ambassadors for fun turning into Brian McCann.
Yeah, and that's the thing again, because those of us that have thought for a long time that baseball players are entirely too sensitive, yeah. I'm always amused at how easily offended people in the world of baseball can be.
Uh-huh.
You know, like something
Brian Dozier.
I mean, you know, you celebrate, I'm offended.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm offended that you're happy with your accomplishment.
Uh-huh.
You know, it doesn't take, I don't have to point in your face and scream at you. I can just scream excitement. And I mean, you know, Francisco Lindor feels the need to apologize for celebrating the home run he hits in Puerto Rico. And I think you and I are on the same boat of like, why are we so easily offended when the biggest, baddest athletes on the planet in the NFL can do choreographed celebrations and no one seems to think of it as showing the other team up there celebrating their own accomplishment? And Salvi was the antidote to that.
Uh-huh.
So it is sad to see, like, man, now you're saying, and another thing I've always, and I think you agree with me on this, the bizarre punitive justice in baseball. If you think that someone taunted you to throw a baseball at him, which Salvador Perez openly talked about, if a guy's going to do this, we're going to tell our pitchers to hit him.
Uh-huh.
Like in basketball, if LeBron James talked trash on somebody, they're like, hey, next time you get the ball and you're bringing it down the court, just throw it at LeBron James' head as hard as you can.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah,
people will be like, what are you doing? Yeah. That's the dumbest thing ever. But in baseball, it's just like, yeah, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You just throw a baseball at him.
Yes, yes. Okay. Throw this hard projectile as hard as you can to put him on first base.
Yeah. And there's like, oh, okay, oh, that's what we do. Well, they've won two in a row.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on the Royals before we move on? Jorge Soler got you excited?
I mean, so I actually, I wrote this last week, I guess, but I don't think this season's going that bad for them. I really don't. Like, I know they stink. Like Jake Junis is part of the future and, you know, he gave it up the other night, but he's having a really good year. And I believe in that guy. I really like him. He outperforms his stuff and he does it with, you know, sort of confidence and feel and, you know, sort of an inherent knowledge. Yeah. I mean, like I would love to be as confident in anything as he appears to be in pitching. Like, I mean, he just sort of has it. And Jorge Soler is potentially a big part of this team's future, a power bat, you know, the likes of which they really haven't had. Mike Moustakas is having a monster year. Kelvin Herrera, you know, having a really great year. So all of the guys that are doing really well are either part of the future or part of the, you know, sort of the July 31st future. You know, that they can flip Moose, potentially. I mean, there still needs to be a market for him. But he's hitting his way into being a really good DH acquisition for somebody if they're in the race. You know, Kelvin Herrera, relief pitchers are always in demand. You know, I mean, so they're sort of winning on maybe all three fronts in some ways. I mean, they're going to get, if they continue like this, they're going to get a boatload of draft money and, you know, a high pick. Although there's a lot of bad teams in baseball, you know, whoever has the like eighth worst record in baseball is probably going to lose like 95 games. So, you know, the competition is stiff, for the number one pick this year. But they're doing well on that. You know, those guys, the guys in the future are sort of, you know, having encouraging starts at least. I mean, we're not even into May yet. And the guys that you potentially want to flip are doing well, which could bolster the value, which could get a much needed injection of talent into, you know, sort of a dilapidated farm system. So, look, the games are often boring. The Royals are often losing, you know, the last two games notwithstanding. But in sort of the bigger, the macro, I think things are going okay. I really do.
Yeah. It's just, you know, you got to suffer through it.
It's hard to watch.
You know,
yep. Yep.
The old
it's
adage is
hard to watch.
The best thing about baseball is there's a game every day. The worst thing about baseball is there's a game every day.
Totally.
And that's kind of where the Royals sit right now. But like you said, in the era of tanking, it's a race to the bottom. It really is. And I know a lot of people were asking you questions over the weekend about whether or not this team's going to lose 100 games, which is hard to do. They're 7-20 now. Are you seeing 100 losses?
So I don't. I would bet on the under. Would
that what be if they trade the all those guys you mentioned? What if they trade Herrera and Moustakas and all that?
I just think the math is hard, and especially, like, you know, we just talked about, there's a lot of bad teams. There's a lot of teams that aren't trying. So, you know, by definition, that means you're going to play those bad teams a lot. Somebody has to win those games. I'm betting on the math on this. I just think it's hard to lose 100 games. And, you know, in the second half, you remember, was it 2000 and I think it was 2006. The Royals were just on absolute cruise control for 104 losses or so. They ended up losing, I think, exactly 100 that year. But they had a really good September. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2006, maybe it was 07. It was one of those really bad years, and they had a great September, and it just sort of altered their win loss record by a bunch. I mean, I don't know, something like that could happen, and they're going to get younger. You know, in the second half, the team that plays on August 6th, or just say on August 1st, is going to be a lot different than the team, you know, that's going to play in Boston this week. Jorge Bonifacio. Raul Mondesi is going to be up. If Bubba Starling is healthy, he's going to be up. Richard Lovelady, you know, they're going to have a lot. Yeah, I know you guys like him. You know, they're going to have a lot of these guys up. And look, maybe they'll be overmatched. You know, maybe they won't be able to hit big league pitching. You know, but they'll have energy. You know, they'll have a lot of energy. And you never know how that goes. I would still bet against them losing 100. But God, they've done some things that 100 lost teams would do.
All right, we'll take a break. We got Sam Mellinger in studio. We'll talk about the Chiefs and the draft with Sam when we come back, and we will allow him to celebrate as much as he wants in studio while he's here. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I mean, we see Speaks as a guy that it'll be Justin and D in Speaks. I mean, that's how I see it, just based off the tape and the evaluation. I think, you know, last year we had a situation where D was hurt, right? And, you know, Frankie Zombo had to play a lot of plays. Now bringing Breland back in here, we feel we have, you know, the ability to kind of line up and have Justin and D, and then Breland can kind of work in there. And then Tano can still develop and kind of maybe do a little bit of both. And then Frankie can probably assume more of a team's role. But, again, Justin, D, and Breland is kind of how we see it. 90 will be in that rotation. And, again, with O'Daniel, you're looking at the percentages that you play in that dime stuff, and then all the teams. So these guys will be on the field and be contributors. And again, they'll make their presence felt because of how they play and the way they play.
All right, there's Brett Veach. The Chiefs went heavy defense in the 2018 draft. And I don't know that you'll find a single person who will say that was a bad idea, considering what their offense was.
Yes, sir.
What they've invested in the offense already, and what their defense has been. Sam, your thoughts on Brett Veach and his first run at the draft as a general manager for this team?
Yeah, so I think two things sort of equally strongly, if that's a phrase I can use. The first is I have no freaking idea if any of these guys are going to be good, and I'm skeptical. Other than a small number of guys that really, really do the work, I'm skeptical of anybody that has a strong opinion about whether it was a good draft or not. That said, I do think that you can judge thought process and, you know, sort of priorities. And in that way, I love it. I absolutely do. I like that Brett seems very aggressive, trading up. You know, he was part of that. John Dorsey's the GM. He was part of the push. You know, Pat was sort of his guy. Like, that's come out from a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. Pat was sort of Brett's guy. Wasn't the only one. I mean, everybody in that front office was pretty much in love with him. But now he's the GM, and he trades up for his first two picks. Trades up for guys that were sort of projected to be available from the spot where the Chiefs were trading out of. Now, who knows about these projections? I tend to put a lot more stock into what an NFL GM thinks rather than, you know, sort of, you know, a mock draft on Bleacher Report or whatever. But I like that he's aggressive. I like that he's using, you know, sort of an extra pick or two to get the guy that he wants. Priorities. I mentioned priorities. Obviously, I'm into adding on the defense. You know, the I don't want to get Jake going here, but one of the things about the Sammy Watkins deal is just sort of like, really? Like, you guys are pretty good offensively, you know? Like, let's focus on the other side. And I get it. Like, they added Fuller. They added Hitchens. But they needed this. They needed, you know, not just defense, but they needed defensive line help. You know, that line is thin. That line underperformed, I believe this, more than any position group on the team last year. And they lost Benny Logan. I know Benny Logan's kind of a hard guy to appreciate. He's subtle. It's a run stopper, all that stuff. But I think that's a real loss for them. So I think that they addressed, you know, some needs. And one of the most interesting things that he said was the bit about, you know, we need to get tougher and meaner. And, you know, when you blow when you have a playoff lead, you blow a lead like that and a team just marches 9 minutes on you, like, that can't happen. And I think that he's got some guys, whether they become starters now or in the future or whatever, I think he believes that some of these guys bring that sort of, you know, some scouts say it, that, like, bring that nasty. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's absolutely something they needed to.
Yeah, I mean, so they let Benny Logan go. They bring in Xavier Williams. Mm-hmm. Xavier Williams hasn't proven himself to be,
right.
you know, a regular player. He's you know, he's a piece on the interior defensive line. So I think that was definitely something they needed to add. The Breland Speaks one is the most intriguing one to me because it is a bit of a projection. I had somebody, and I pointed this out last hour, that to me that's kind of, if Brett Veach is going to have real value to this organization, that's one of the main things he supposedly is going to be really good at, is being able to project guys, mm-hmm. to maybe see them as something that they weren't in college, mm-hmm. or that other people don't see them as, and say, no, I think he can be this. Mm-hmm. And I got a tweet from somebody that said, well, the film says Speaks was moved around on defense a lot at Ole Miss. He wasn't used exclusively as a defensive tackle, so the projection was based on tape. Yeah, I get that, but nobody was calling this guy an outside linebacker in a 3-4. I didn't see that anywhere. I saw defensive end in a 3-4 or defensive tackle in a 4-3. I didn't see anybody calling this guy an outside linebacker in a 3-4 until Andy Reid made that comment at the podium after the draft pick, and then Brett Veach, you know, backed it up, and they referred to him as a Tom Bahali thing. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the most intriguing thing about it. If they see something in this guy that maybe other teams didn't, that means they got value that maybe is greater than what other people thought it would be.
Yeah.
If it works out. I mean, that's the whole thing. Yeah. We don't know yet. But
yeah. But, I like that they're going for it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I absolutely
you want your
do.
GM to be yeah. conservative and kind of take, like, who everybody projects and the safe pick and all that stuff. That's a really good way to not get any stars,
mm-hmm.
you know. And mm-hmm. look, like, there's a reason there are risks, because there are downsides to risks. Marcus Peters was a huge risk, taking him that high in the draft. Marcus Peters was a terrific player for the Chiefs. Tyreek Hill, an incredible, for different reasons, but a pretty significant risk. He's been mm-hmm. a terrific player. Travis Kelce. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes is a risk in a lot of ways.
Sure.
You know, with sort of the system and his background and some
anytime you take a quarterback, it's a risk, and you trade up to get him too. Yeah. That's even a bigger
yeah.
risk.
But I, you know, you dig it, right? Like, you know, go for it. Shoot your shot and you know, see what you can get. They also I really like what I know of, you know, now, like, you know, looking into him after the pick. The Dorian O'Daniel pick is really interesting to me too. Like, yeah. you know, Veach called him a chess piece, and I kind of like there is some versatility there when you watch some of his tape of playing, you know, kind of all over the field, you know, different positions, you know, instinctual. Like, I mean, there's a lot to like in that pick of just sort of like how he can help and you know, a nickel dime linebacker or something like that. I mean, he just there's a lot he can do, and that pick made a lot of sense to me too.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. My big stance last season was that after the loss of Eric Berry, by far the biggest problem for the team was they kept the same system, which was anytime
yeah.
it was a, you know, nickel package type situation, they would take a linebacker off the field and drop Daniel Sorensen into the box.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to do it with Eric Berry, and it was great because Eric Berry was a great box safety. Mm-hmm. Daniel Sorensen, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'd all prefer if you could even keep Eric Berry in the safety position instead of moving him up to linebacker in those situations. They didn't have an athletic inside linebacker that could play in that situation last year. Yeah. Reggie Ragland bolstered their run defense a lot, but you don't want him playing in space very often in obvious passing down situations. And this looks kind of like their answer to that. Like, okay, now we've got Hitchens, who we think can be on the field for three downs. Now we've got a guy that maybe we can put in on third down and take Ragland off the field and keep our safeties back at safety.
Yep.
And who knows if he'll become that right away. But it sounds like they feel like they got a guy who's a legit special teams player right off the bat.
Yep.
In the meantime, and if he grows into that other position, that can change the way they play the game.
Yeah, and I mean, this isn't a new trend at all, but you know, teams and the Chiefs especially are in those sub packages so often that you have to draft for it, and mm-hmm. you have to draft high. And one of the things.
It's almost a misnomer to call it a sub package. You end up in your nickel package, maybe more snaps during the course of the game than your quote unquote base package.
Yeah, yeah, a plurality, if not a majority, a lot of times. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things, and this is in some ways, I guess, backing up or maybe even restating what you just said. You know, they need to get faster. They need to get tougher on defense for sure. But one of the weaknesses that Eric Berry's injury exposed was just kind of a lack of versatility.
Yes.
And, you know, because that guy, Eric Berry, is an incredibly, I mean, for all his talents, all his strengths, the best one may be his versatility, all the different things that he can do in any given moment on any given snap. Justin Houston can do some of that. I know, and look, I do it too. A lot of us complain about how often he's dropped into coverage. But he can do it. He does it pretty well. He plays the run. He plays the pass.
Yep.
He does kind of everything. Outside those two guys, and you know, when one of them's gone and both those guys have injury history, you know, they kind of have guys that can do sort of one thing. And that's a problem.
And that made it real easy with Bob Sutton's rigid system.
Yes.
It made it real easy for teams to, and you did a great job breaking that down after the playoff game. They could basically line up the personnel they wanted.
Yes.
We know we can force Justin Houston to drop into coverage.
Dictated.
And they got nobody else that can get after the quarterback if we do that to them. We know we can get Daniel Sorensen in the box, mm-hmm. and that's a huge mismatch in our favor. You're right. If you have versatile guys like that, it's a lot more difficult for the other team to just scheme players mm-hmm. out of the picture the way they were the last couple of years,
yep.
especially last year.
Yep. And so now they've got, you know, potentially those three guys that are all versatile. And Kendall Fuller, you know, I mean, he's a corner. It's hard for corners to be super versatile, but he can play inside and outside. He can play the slot. He can also play outside.
Right. Steven Nelson may be in the same vein there.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's just important to have some guys that do different things because – you know, Daniel Sorensen can be a decent player, but, you know, one of the biggest takeaways last year was how much he specifically was exposed with, mm-hmm. with Berry gone. And it's just sort of like eye-opening, at least to me, and I'm sure smarter people had this figured out before, of just how much Eric Berry covers up some of the things that Sorensen can't do. And when Barry's in there, he can do the thing, you know, Sorensen can do the things that he's good at. And I think that, you know, this is another one of those pieces. And maybe he ends up just being, you know, a better Daniel Sorensen, you know, O'Daniel we're talking about. And in that case, that's great too.
Yeah, he's 220 pounds. I mean, that's to me, Sorensen got beat up a lot last year because he was asked to do something that he wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't built to do.
And shouldn't have been asked to do.
Yeah. The other player that I think is most intriguing for the Kansas City Chiefs is the safety from Texas A&M. We're talking about a guy who was a big play guy. Interceptions in big moments. Seems in some ways to be a bit of an all or nothing type of guy. We watched some of the film on him creating fumbles, strips, you know, on the goal line in crucial situations, but also missing a lot of tackles. There mm-hmm. seemed to be a little bit of that, you know, Marcus Peters on the field stuff I'm talking about here, to that, like, it was like all or nothing, big play ability. Are you excited? See, that's an intriguing guy to me to get in the fourth round that seems to have a nose for, you know, taking the ball away.
Yeah, totally. There's a couple things I like about that pick. One is, and look, like some of you have to separate like message from reality sometimes, and that can be hard. But it's sort of the idea that he dropped in the draft because he added 10 pounds because he wanted to get bigger and see if he could still perform, you know, agility, 40 and all that mm-hmm. stuff at the same level. That makes sense to me. You know, it makes sense that he, like, why he wouldn't want to try and do that.
Yeah.
And it also makes sense that that's why he dropped. If that's really why he dropped, You know, I think a lot of teams are being pretty silly, you know, dropping a guy because he gained 10 pounds, you know, to try and do better at the combine. He can easily lose that. So, you know, that part of it is easy. There was also a note. I saw Therese had this. I'm trying to find it.
He had him on his all-juice team, by the way.
He did. Here it is. He said, this is good to hear. Willie Davis, the lead scout on Armani Watts, said he took most of his gambles with help over the top. Risk taker empowered by his scheme should alleviate any concern there. That I wanted to read that. I wanted to know that. And assuming that checks out, you know, this is a guy, you don't get guys, you know, in the middle and later parts of the draft that don't have question marks, that don't have, you know, red flags or whatever. And, you know, that to me kind of answers two big questions on him. Why did he drop, you know, physically? Well, it's because he tried to add weight and he got slower and teams weren't impressed. You said, you know, gambles, takes chances. Yeah. And a lot of that was scheme oriented according to the scouts. I mean, there's just, you want those questions to at least be addressed and answered. And I think that they are with him. I think he's got a really good future. And that position group too is another one they needed help. Ron Parker, I don't know if he's underappreciated, but I think he was a really good player for the Chiefs. And, you know, $5 million, maybe it didn't make sense to bring him back, but he was a good player, versatile, like kind of knew what was going on at, you know, at different positions, you know, can play other guys' positions. And so maybe if Watts is the replacement for that, or at least, you know, part of the puzzle, they've addressed another weakness.
Yeah, I think they've got a potentially really, really good player in Armani Watts. I'm very excited about him. We'll take a break. Back with more with Sam Mellinger after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We got Sam Mellinger in studio. There was a controversial moment over the weekend involving a Kansas City sports team that I think leads to a broader conversation about video review in sports in general and the iterations it takes on in every sport. Sporting Kansas City lost 1-0 to the New England Revolution. Till Bunbury scored a goal that was originally disallowed on the field. The referees said, no, he was offside. But now that they have video review in soccer, they went back and reviewed the play and realized that, yes, Bunbury was standing in an offside position, but it was actually Roger Espinoza of Sporting who knocked the ball into his path, so he can't be offside if the ball's kicked to him by the other team. And so the goal stood. Now, the interesting thing about this, Sam, though, is that the referee's assistant, who is the linesman who decides offsides and not, had put the flag up. And did that maybe cause the Sporting Kansas City players to freeze for a moment or stop playing for a second and allow Till Bunbury, who just kind of rolled the ball into the goal and then turned around and thought, well, that's not going to count because I'm offside. And should that be taken into account when the review happens? Players are told to play to the whistle, not to the flag in soccer. That's a little different than other sports. We don't have assistant referees in other sports waving a flag around saying, you should call this foul, ref. What did you make of it when you watched the play?
Absolutely play to the whistle, right? I think that's sort of what should happen. And so I don't have a ton of sympathy for, you know, the lost point that Sporting, you know, with perfect refereeing, they would have had a point. They don't have a point. You play to the whistle, and that's on them. But on the bigger conversation here, absolutely, it's natural. You're asking. You said it during the break. You put it really well. You're asking players to go against their instincts. You're asking players to go against what they've been taught, how the game's always been played. That you see the flag go up, that's offsides. And just to be clear, this is not Sporting whining. I mean, it looked like New England thought it was offsides too.
Yeah.
And it was kind of you know, a half-assed effort at the goal and a half-assed effort, you know, from Amelia to stop it. I mean, that's just how it looked. My biggest beef with video review in all sports, there needs to be a time limit on these things, and whether it's 30 seconds, whether it's 60 seconds, whether it's 90 seconds, whatever, if you do it, the call is wrong in a certain amount of time, the call stands, and just let's move on. And the second thing is, and this is kind of what this is applicable to, this game, how Sporting gave up the goal, is that video review is supposed to correct calls that, you know, the eye can tell was wrong. You know, just a referee mistake. video review is not intended, at least I don't think it was intended, to correct things that you can't possibly see with the naked eye in real time. And you know, the baseball example of this that kept coming up is, you know, kind of the pop-up slide.
God, I hate that. I hate that.
Yeah.
I absolutely loathe the fact that that is now reversing calls when a guy's foot pops a half an inch off the yes. bag for a millisecond, yes. and they're calling him out now, when for the history of baseball, that's been safe.
Yes.
That's not why video review was put into place.
Yes.
And that's one thing I'm with you on this. The threshold when they put it into soccer is the one that I wish that would be adopted in all sports. And that is, they made this statement, and here's what I'm afraid of in the world of soccer. I worry that someday they're gonna go away from this because people will bitch and complain. Because that's what we do as human beings. We bitch and complain about everything. And we bitch and complain until somebody finally changes it, and then we find something else to bitch and complain about.
Sure.
But right now, the threshold, and they made this clear when they rolled it out. I had to go as a broadcaster. They made us go on these conference calls and read all this stuff about the way it was going to be employed. And I love this. They said, our goal is not to get every call correct. And at first people go, wait a second, shouldn't your goal be to get every call correct? Like, no, because it's impossible, by the way. There are judgment calls. Fouls are called in football and in basketball and in soccer that are judgment calls. I could see pass interference and you could say, no, that's not pass interference. That's two guys hand fighting. You know, that's a judgment call. You're never going to get it right because we can't even get a consensus on what right is, mm-hmm. right? That's first and foremost. They said, our goal is not to get every call right. Our goal is to fix the clear and obvious mistakes. The outrageous ones, the perfect game that I can't remember the guy's name at this point in my life, but the perfect
Jim
game.
Jim Joyce was the umpire.
Yeah, the Jim Joyce.
Armando Galarraga.
Yeah, Armando Galarraga that he blew, and everybody knew he blew it, and Jim Joyce admitted he blew it.
Yep.
It's to save the ref and the game yep. from horrible mistakes that we all agree on. That's all we're trying to clean up. Sporting had an appeal for a penalty late in that game that you could have said, well, I thought that Diego Rubio was fouled in the penalty area. But my co-host, you know, on the broadcast, Matt Lawrence, thought, no, I don't think it was enough to give a penalty. They didn't review that one. And you know what? As a Sporting fan, you can be mad about that. But at the end of the day, that's not what the review is there for. The review is for the obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
The one where everybody knows that one was a foul. And I wish that that's where we went with NBA, with college football, but for by far needs to go there because they just review everything, and the game already is insufferably long, and if they just took that criteria, let's not worry about getting every call right. If we have to watch for 5 minutes to see if he got his second foot in bounds,
yes.
the call stands, and let's move on with our life because we're not going to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we want to see in every sport, isn't it?
100%. I mean, there's sort of, you know, what's the line about? Don't let perfect be the enemy of good, or perfect be the enemy of better, and that's sort of where we're at, right? Like, you know, video review in all sports has gotten like so micro, it's gotten so much into the weeds that it's sort of become its own worst enemy. And I think, like, you know, the tendency, the natural thing is just get rid of it. You know what I mean? But like before we had video review, how much were we like bitching about refereeing and officiating? I mean,
of course.
So there needs to be a middle. There needs, you know, the pendulum, you know, used to be on one side, and I feel like we're getting to the point where it's sort of reached as far as it can go on the
yeah.
other side, and let's find a way in the middle. And, you know, again, in this specific instance, you know, yes, Sporting could have covered itself by, you know, playing to the whistle and all that stuff, but everybody on the field stopped.
Right.
You know, everybody did. And, you know, that's how the game has always been played. The flag goes up, it's offsides, get the ball. Because if you watch on the replay, like, you know, Beasler, who, as you pointed out during the break, is like one of the few that was playing to the whistle. But, you know, there's sort of like a moment or two where people are kind of standing around. Beasler, like, you know, looks at me and says, let's go, put the ball down and let's go, like,
yeah,
you know,
it's offside. We're gonna restart. Let's
attack.
Go. Yeah.
And that's you see the New England players like kind of running. Oh, crap! Like, we got to play defense now. You know.
Yeah.
and that's how it was. And the other part of it too, like I would and you probably wouldn't have wanted to talk about this if this wasn't the case, but you watch that in real time. It's not obvious that Espinosa kicked the ball.
Right.
Like it kind of looks. I don't know who the New England player was, but kind of looks
yeah.
like it was his foot.
Yeah,
and it was clearly offsides. Like, that's how it looked in that chaos of the moment. So I guess I would have a lot, you know, I'd feel differently if it was just an obviously missed call in real time that they're correcting, but I don't think that's how it was.
Yeah, in the end, I mean, I think they executed it the way the rules say they should have. I mean, they executed the video, the review, the rating,
totally.
The way the rules
yes.
say they could.
And that's important to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was unlucky for Sporting Kansas City the way that worked out. Just an interesting conversation because we see more and more replay used across the board. Sam, we got working this week, man.
I need to figure that out. I feel like I always say that. But I was going to do a plan last night, and I ended up got too full on ribs and beer.
Nice.
And just got sidetracked a little bit. So
sounds fantastic.
I don't know.
Royals, you got the minutes coming up pretty soon?
I do. I'm going to get going on that this morning.
So. All right. Usually there's always tomfoolery and great questions that come in that go in directions you didn't foresee. So check out the Mellinger Minutes. Okay. Thanks,
no
buddy.
No fun, but no fun.
That's right. No fun.
Or Salvador Perez will have my head.
Yeah, that's right. Just don't talk any. Just don't celebrate any of your good points that you make, and we'll be fine. That's Sam. Coming up next, Herm Edwards, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.